April is Autism Acceptance Month. We'll have more on how Arkansans are recognizing the occasion. An upcoming event delves deep into the state archives with an eye toward the state's sports history, and Special Olympics athletes leave it all on the field in Northwest Arkansas. Those stories and more are coming up this week on the News Wrap from the Arkansas Newsroom. I'm Daniel Breen, News Director of Little Rock Public Radio. Each week, we're recapping the top stories from all across the natural state. We'll unpack the headlines, share exclusive insights, and provide the context you need to fully grasp the issues that matter most to Arkansans. That's this week on the Arkansas News Wrap, coming up right after the news from NPR. This is the Arkansas News Wrap. I'm Daniel Breen with Little Rock Public Radio. April is Autism Acceptance Month, and the recognition of autism in the month of April has a long history. KUAF's Matthew Moore brings us this story.
All the way back in 1970, the Autism Society of America launched a national campaign to raise awareness. Back then, autism was considered a rare childhood disorder, and diagnosis data wasn't collected on a national level. In 1970, a psychiatrist based in Wisconsin conducted a population-based study of the prevalence of autism. The study showed about 3 out of every 10,000 children met the criteria for autism. The national number today, 1 in 31 children. That's according to the CDC. Dr. Susan Averett is a pediatrician based in Arkansas who works with Healthy Steps, the statewide program that helps to screen for autism and other developmental delays. She says the shift from Autism Awareness Month to Autism Acceptance Month is useful.
I think people are becoming more accepting of the fact that it is a spectrum, and that it what autism is and the way that we see autism has changed.
Autism as a diagnosis first shows up in the first edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual in the early 1950s. Early diagnoses connected the condition to mental illnesses like schizophrenia. The DSM-5, published in 2013, widened the characteristics and conditions to be diagnosed.
I think just the very core definition of what autism is has changed so drastically, and that our understanding of it obviously has evolved as well. It has gone from being, you know, the most severe patients are, you know, nonverbal and are not able to, support their activities of daily living without full support, to the level 1 diagnosis now, where patients require different levels of support, but the level 1 patients requiring some, you know, support, whereas it gets more and more significant as the levels increase.
For decades, screening for autism happened with infants and toddlers and was diagnosed at a young age. And to be clear, that's where the majority of these screenings happen. But Averett says one way she's seeing the shift from awareness to acceptance is in the desire for people to ask for an assessment on themselves.
I have seen some children and teenagers and young adults who understand themselves better knowing that they're on the spectrum than before they did. They didn't quite have language or a thought process on how to describe their differences in the way that they saw themselves from their peers. I feel like there are a lot of people who get peace of mind from that diagnosis, which I wouldn't have thought, you know, 10, 15 years ago would be the case.
She says she's heard from patients that getting the diagnosis can be less about acceptance from other people and more about self-acceptance. Even though about 3% of children are diagnosed on the autism spectrum, that doesn't mean acceptance is prevalent. Stigma still exists, and Averett says she still sees parents who aren't willing to have their children assessed for autism.
The response is also a spectrum, but culturally, there are probably still some cultures where it might be more stigmatizing. And I think that, you know, sometimes there's an element of denial that there might be anything, quote unquote, wrong with my child.
Ultimately, it's the availability of services and resources that a child needs. She says when a young child is already receiving services, like speech therapy or occupational therapy, they may be able to get more intensive services to help, too.
And so in order to get those services, they're more motivated to get the diagnosis. I think when people do come forward to have their child evaluated, they are suspicious enough that they are not in the headspace of rejecting the diagnosis at that point.
It's worth disclosing this far into my reporting that autism is something personal for me. I have a brother 2 years older than me who was diagnosed with autism at the age of 2. And while he has had therapies and treatments and services for 4 decades now, he will forever have autism. Perhaps that's why I find the language of autism acceptance fascinating. Because my brother has always had autism and will always have autism. Averett says it's important to also be willing to accept that there are things to do that can help you get skills and tools, regardless of your age.
By the acceptance of the diagnosis, then you can accept the treatment, therapies, and more modalities better, too. Because I see kids who are 8, 9, 10, 11, and I can remember what they were like when they were 3, 4, and 5, and how much progress they've made. And it doesn't make them no longer on the spectrum. But even within that individual person, there's a spectrum of severity, and there's this ability for them to change levels, you know, if they need less support as they get older. But it's not something we're trying to cure them from.
Averett says when it comes to growth and development, a specific patient comes to mind for her.
Who's about 8 or 9 now, and he's doing so well in school, and the kids love him, and he's made lots of friends, and just how hard he went to daycare, and he got diagnosed when he was about 3, 3 and a half, and started getting intervention and services, and his parents advocated for him. And I didn't know what school was going to be like for him, but it's been a much better experience than I think it would have been if he hadn't had those early intervention social training that he was able to get at an early age.
You can learn more about Healthy Steps, the statewide program designed to help screen your 0 to 3-year-old for autism and other developmental delays when you visit our website, KUAF.com.
That was KUAF's Matthew Moore reporting. The Arkansas State Archives will host its annual Spring Symposium on Saturday, May 2nd at the Historic Arkansas Museum in Little Rock. KASU's Marty Scarborough spoke with Archival Assistant Brian Irby about what to expect from this year's event.
Well, first of all, for people who may not be familiar with the mission and purpose of the Arkansas State Archives, tell us about that.
Okay, so the Arkansas State Archives is one of the oldest state agencies. We've been around since 1905. And we have our mission is to collect the documentary history of Arkansas. So we've been collecting things since 1905, but that doesn't mean our collection started in 1905. We have things that go all the way back to territorial times that have been donated to us over the years. We even have a lot of French land documents from colonial era. What they say, I don't know. I don't speak French, but I'm sure they're fascinating. And so we have just, we operate 3 vaults, and they're just full of anything you'd want to know about Arkansas history.
Well, how do people access those vaults and what's inside of them?
Well, our collections are here in Little Rock, just west of the Capitol building. And what we have anything from governor's papers to individual letters that people, you know, just average Arkansas citizens have written over the years. We have a lot of diaries. Our photo collection is huge. We have tens of thousands of photos from Arkansas history, all in our collections as well. And a lot of maps. We have just anything, really.
Well, I know from time to time that the Arkansas State Archives hosts symposiums like the one that's coming up on May the 2nd. How do having these symposiums fit into your mission?
Okay, well, you know, one of our jobs is to kind of educate the public about Arkansas history. We try not to be the just people who sit in the vault and collect things and, you know, have books that are dusty old books sitting on the shelves. We like to go out in the community and talk about Arkansas. Our job is really kind of just tell people, hey, this is the history of Arkansas, and we'd like to tell you about it.
So what's the focus of this year's spring symposium?
So we're focusing on sports. You know, sports has had such a huge impact on Arkansas culture. And, I mean, you can't really think about Arkansas without thinking of the Arkansas Razorbacks. That's probably the thing that most people think about when they think about Arkansas sports. But our sports legacy goes back, you know, all the way back to territorial times. You see things in the newspaper a lot talking about local games that are going on in the area. And because this is just kind of shot through Arkansas history, we think it's fitting that we set a time to talk about that.
Well, of course, you mentioned the Arkansas Razorbacks, and of course, people follow their football and basketball and baseball teams and so forth. Other universities in our state also have successful athletic programs. But just curious, you know, because our state, other than the Arkansas Travelers, doesn't have any professional teams, there's no NFL or Major League Baseball or even NHL or NBA teams here in Arkansas, how does our state then look at sports with the lack of these professional organizations having a presence in our state?
Well, we're kind of a small state, and, you know, so it's understandable that we don't have any, you know, like real like NBA teams or anything like that. But just because we don't have those things doesn't mean that it hasn't been hugely important. You know, families have gathered around the radio for a long time, listening to the local baseball team on the radio. And it's just hard to think of, you know, growing up in Arkansas without having some kind of attachment to some sport, what's a, you know, whether you play it or you have an uncle who was maybe a football coach or something like that.
Well, I just had the opportunity to visit with a couple of documentary filmmakers who are working on a project about the impact of school districts that were consolidated in the early 2000s and how people in those communities rallied around the local high school sports teams. And of course, that's another aspect of how sports has brought people together in community in our state. I was reminded of that as you were talking about sports in Arkansas.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, you know, the local high school team has always been an important, that's been kind of the centerpiece of most communities in Arkansas that just, you know, kind of rallied around their local sports team. You know, football is a huge thing in Arkansas, and it's, you know, maybe it doesn't get the play that maybe Texas does. You know, Texas had its own TV series about, you know, Friday Night Lights, but that's been just as important in Arkansas. You know, that's a thing that, families on a Friday night would go down and watch their local football team, whether they had kids on the team or not.
My guest today is Brian Irby, archival assistant for the Arkansas State Archives, which is going to be presenting a spring symposium on the topic of the legacy of sports in the natural state. The symposium will be Saturday, May 2nd at the Historic Arkansas Museum in Little Rock. So you've got some speakers that are going to be presenting at this symposium on a variety of topics. Tell us about each one of them, beginning with Jim Yeager.
Okay, Jim Yeager is a baseball historian here in Arkansas, and he spent a lot of time researching different baseball-related topics. For our event, he's going to talk about the Arkansas Travelers in their early days, which it has a really interesting history that I won't try to steal his topic very much, but I'll just give you kind of a taste of what he's going to talk about. The Travelers had a hard time early on being from a small state with not a lot of financial resources, and they were competing in the Southern League against huge cities like Memphis and Atlanta. And so they were always on the bottom, and eventually they almost ran out of money. And then a couple of people that came forward to save the team was Ray Winter, that you may recognize the name. You know, Ray Winter Field, where they played for years, was one of those people. And so he's going to talk a little about, you know, kind of the hard scrabble days of of early Arkansas travelers baseball.
Another gentleman who's going to be presenting at the symposium is UCA professor Buckley T. Foster, and he's talking about a different kind of sport here in Arkansas. Tell us about his topic.
Well, just like you know, your football, your baseball, hunting has probably even been a bigger part of most families' life here in Arkansas. And he's going to talk about the history of hunting in Arkansas, which is, it's got kind of an interesting history. You know, there weren't many rules and regulations that prevented, you know, people from just hunting everything they could find in sight. And so we had, we ended up losing a lot of our local wildlife that way. You know, the bear, Arkansas used to be known as the bear state, and there's hardly any bears left in Arkansas. And it's mostly because people just hunted them almost out of existence. And so he's going to talk a little about that. And he's going to talk about how some reformers got involved to kind of bring conservation in and help, you know, kind of keep the wildlife stable in Arkansas and say what's still here, while also making sure that people are able to, you know, hunt, and, you know, whether for personal use or, you know, commercially. And his book recently won the Ragsdale Award at the Arkansas Historical Association. His book is called How Great Was the Slaughter? And it was it's a fantastic book.
My guest is Brian Irby, archival assistant for the Arkansas State Archives, which is presenting a spring symposium on the topic of the legacy of sports in our state. That event to be held Saturday, May 2nd at the Historic Arkansas Museum in Little Rock. I see that another one of your speakers will be able to talk about his personal experiences in Arkansas sports. Tell us about him.
Yeah, Muskie Harris was a big star with the Arkansas Razorbacks back in the 1970s, and he's going to talk a little about his career growing up in Little Rock and playing for the Central High football team, and then later on for the Arkansas Razorbacks. And he's a fantastic speaker, and I'm really looking forward to hearing him.
Well, then lastly, you're going to be making a presentation yourself. Tell us about your topic.
Yes, I'm going to be talking about the history of prize fighting, which is a history that not many people really know. Prize fighting was illegal in Arkansas for, you know, till about 1925. And that didn't stop the sport from happening. People still organized prize fights, but there were local laws against it. Even in 1895, they were going to hold a world championship fight down in Hot Springs. And the governor was so against this that he declared he was going to call out the state militia to stop the fight. And it was a big, you know, big thing that was reported all across the country. And so I'm going to talk a little about that.
That was Brian Irby, archival assistant with the Arkansas State Archives, speaking with KASU's Marty Scarborough. The Archives' annual spring symposium is set for Saturday, May 2nd at the Historic Arkansas Museum in Little Rock. Earlier this week, Special Olympics Arkansas hosted its Area 3 Spring Games in Fayetteville. KUAF's Jack Travis was there and brings us this report.
Athletes take their mark, the starter pistol fires, and they're off. Area 3 Special Olympics Arkansas athletes crowded the track and field at Ramey Junior High and brought the energy. The competitors faced off in athletics, powerlifting, and bocce ball. Alex Davis is a swimmer in the Special Olympics and is part of Team USA heading to the 2026 Games in Minnesota. So he wasn't competing yesterday, but he was still all smiles as a volunteer. He says the Olympics' impact on him has changed over the years.
As I've gotten older, it certainly has changed, but right now it's given the opportunity to show these athletes their abilities and not focus on their disabilities, and to give them an opportunity to show their skills in an environment that is purely positive, where everyone's here to cheer each other on and support each other. There's always good sportsmanship, there's never any negativity, and it's a good way to come out here and support these athletes and to encourage them to come out and keep on doing what they're doing.
Preparations for yesterday's games began back in September. Keisha Guerin is the development coordinator for Area 3 and says it takes a lot of people to make events like this happen.
We do have to have volunteers. That's how we lean on our community. Our actual team is made of 11 people. Outside of that, we lean on the community. We lean on our volunteers to help us put this together. We have John L. who helps run this event. He's the one that puts it together. He gets all the community a part of it. That's what we need, is more people like that who want to just be involved and be invested and be here.
Fayetteville Public Schools staff and students turned out en masse yesterday to help out. And former superintendent John L. Colbert is heavily involved in Special Olympics and says he's witnessed the game's positive impacts on athletes competing and students volunteering.
You know, as I look at the different athletes from Fayetteville High School, when they interact with the athletes, it's just wonderful. You can see that they, too, are so excited that they are here making a difference, helping someone else to succeed and participate in events. That piece is so important to me, and I love seeing that. It's just like it's contagious, and they just get so excited about the fact that they are here to help and make sure the games are carried out.
Jason Edwards is co-director of Northwest Arkansas Special Olympics. He says that this isn't the only event for Area 3 athletes in 2026, and further emphasized just how much it takes to put these events on, which are all free of charge for participants, thanks to community fundraising efforts like the Polar Plunge and Law Enforcement Torch Run.
It just takes everybody, like Dr. Culver said, as the volunteers, but all the athletes who help. And we've got an athlete leadership group who comes out, helps get athletes ready, all the coaches, and then just the athletes themselves come into the meetings. But it takes months to in advance. This is kind of like the biggest event. It's like the Super Bowl of the year for Special Olympics as we finish up the year. And it's just a great event. But it does take many people to put it on, and we thank everyone for helping us be successful in this event.
Colbert says that energy and enthusiasm keep him coming back.
I've been doing this about 50-some years, and it gets better every year. Every time I turn around and see the athletes coming out with basketball, they're there having a great time. Then we, like Jason said, this is one of the biggest events in Area 3, and then see them to go from basketball to swimming and then now to the track and field. They're all pumped up. They're excited, ready to get out there and compete. It's just, they believe in their mantra. It says, if I cannot win, just give me the courage to be a winner and out there doing the job. So it's just wonderful. I love it.
Olympian Alex Davis says it's not only an important day that a lot of people worked hard to put on and compete in, it's also just a blast to watch.
I always love watching the wheelchair races when they come out and come through. They're always so happy and so excited to come through. And when they come up to get their medals, it's always so amazing to come watch them up and roll up the ramps. Those are always my favorite. Or the little ones when they come down here from the elementary school and the middle schools to come do their race, it's always fun to watch them.
You can visit SpecialOlympicsArkansas.org for more.
That was KUAF's Jack Travis reporting. And that's it for this week. The Arkansas News Wrap is brought to you by the Arkansas Newsroom, a collaboration between KUAF in Fayetteville, KASU in Jonesboro, and Little Rock Public Radio. You can find this week's episode on any of our station's websites. Until next time, I'm Daniel Breen, and this is the Arkansas News Wrap.